Welcome back to the MLB.com StatCast podcast. I'm your host, Mike Petriello. Here with me, Matt Myers, MLB.com national editor. Matt, hello.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing great. Matt, we are going to have some conversation just you and I this week. We're not going to have a guest because Will Leach, my MLB Plus co-host, told me how much he enjoys hearing you and I talk about baseball. So that's exactly what we're going
to
do.
Well, that's nice to hear.
I thought so. We are going to get to a whole bunch of fun stuff in just a second. Please note, you can now find the podcast at statcastpodcast.com. Much easier to remember. Please tell your friends. And please also note that next week we're going to have a very special in-studio guest we're really excited about, and I hope you listen because I think you're going to get a lot out of it. Today, we're going to talk about some interesting stuff. We have a record-breaking home run in Texas. We have some interesting defensive numbers that we've really come up with that I think, you know, are kind of cool that aren't out there that much. We're going to talk about the Tigers and their incredible fastball spin. We're going to talk about Jose Fernandez, who's had one of the weirdest stretches of pitching I think either of us have ever seen. And we're also going to talk about the team leading baseball in home runs that you would never, ever think would be leading baseball in home runs. So let's get right to that record-breaking home run. Nomar Mazara from Texas, who hit a 491-foot home run in Texas against Hector Santiago, an absolute blast. And I think it's something we need to dive into a little bit because it raises some interesting questions about what goes into home run distance, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was anytime there's one of these record-breaking home run distances by StatCast measurements, there's always like a little bit of like, oh, like, you know, some questions about the measurement because obviously home run distances have always been kind of this a little bit of a nebulous thing, and StatCast is one of the we think is the most advanced attempt to really make a science of home run measurements. So Mazara's home run, obviously, you know, got people excited, 491 feet, like, hey, I got to see this. But obviously, home run distances can sometimes be a little deceiving on the eyes. This one, it went to the second deck in Texas. And it was, you didn't get to see it travel as far as maybe some other home runs.
Well, we should clarify that too. When we say distance, we're measuring projected distance. So it's not where did it land in the seats, it's where would it have landed if not for the seats or the stands or whatever, if it had just an unencumbered path, you know, to the ground. So obviously it didn't quite go 491 feet, it went, you know, some shorter than that, but that's where we expect it would have gone if there was nothing there. So he hit this ball at 108 miles an hour, which is obviously really good, and he hit it at a 27-degree launch angle. And so those are two of the most important things that go into batted ball distance, right? You got to hit the ball hard, and you got to not hit it straight up or down, right?
Yeah, and then to give a little more context, launch angle, you know, the line drives, I mean, 25 to 30 is basically home runs. That's like sort of the home run. That's like the peak home run range is 25 to 30. Zero is right back at the pitcher's release point. Anything negative is basically like a ground ball hit right into the right into the ground.
25 to 30 is the real sweet spot. Like that narrow 5-degree band has almost 40% of home runs this year. It's just within there. I think the lowest we've ever seen last year, Stanton hit one at 11 degrees, an absolute like frozen rope laser. You don't see that too often. That's the lowest I think I've ever seen. But yeah, that 25 to 30, like that's where you want to be. And he hit this one 27 degrees.
Yeah. So it was basically, it was the perfect sweet spot. Obviously 108 off the bat.
I believe our friend Darren Willman tweeted this out the other day, that if you have that combination, it's a home run 100% of the time. Obviously, this is a no-doubt home run, right? So it's not really the question of was it over the fence or not. It's by how far. And so what that kind of brings us to is, you know, what are the other things that affect batted ball distance? So obviously, exit velocity, you got to hit the ball hard, launch angle. But, you know, you think about it, there's a lot of environmental inputs, right? Elevation, obviously Coors Field, this wasn't a Coors Field, but, you know, if you have thin air, that can really affect how far the ball goes. Everybody knows that. Temperature, right? And temperature and humidity. If the night is really hot, that obviously has an effect on how far the ball goes. I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago when Jordy Mercer had the longest home run of the year, and the Pirates had three of the five longest at the time because it was a really hot and humid night in Arizona.
With the roof open.
With the window open. Wind, obviously, wind. And this kind of brings us to what we're talking about with Mazara, because it was a windy night in Dallas that day, and we looked into this. He hit the home run at 1:42 p.m. Central Time, and at that time, the wind was 10 to 12 miles an hour from the south-southwest. Given the orientation of the park, it was right at his back. So that served to push the ball further, which is a really big and important part of that.
Exactly. And research done by Dr. Alan Nathan has shown that every extra 5 miles per hour of wind, assuming it's blowing in the right direction, which it was in this case, can add approximately 18 feet of distance for an exit speed of 100 to 105 miles an hour and a launch angle of
25 to 30
degrees. So we could be looking at, you know, 35 to 40 feet added on to what would be like, if Mazzara hit that in a vacuum, we may be looking at a 450-foot home run, and we've seen other home runs with those specifications go about 450 feet, but Mazzara, perfect timing,
right.
And 491.
And it was Texas, right? Yes. It was a warm day that day, too. So it's a combination of all these things. Like, and you know, you watch the replay. Obviously, he crushed that ball, no doubt about that. But I think the fact that you know, some of the other home runs that have had a similar angle and velocity that haven't quite gone as far, it just they haven't had like the environmental impact.
And a side note on that is, like, for example, last night Chris Davis had a controversial foul ball. It was ruled a home run. They ruled it foul. And then this morning David Price tweeted, "Oh, that was the most majestic home run I've ever seen. I want to see some Statcast on it." And it certainly was majestic. It was a 43-degree launch angle and 103 miles per hour off the bat.
43-degree launch
angle. Exactly. This is about as high as we've seen a home run this year. But because it was the way it was hit in Baltimore, where there's no upper deck there, you know, it was very deceiving because it was in the air. You watched it in the air for like seven seconds. So it seems like it goes a lot farther than it does. It actually went a little over 400 feet, which is basically the norm for balls with those specifications. But if you were just watching that versus the Mazzara home run, it would almost seem more impressive because you got to watch the entire flight of the ball, you know, all the way onto, what is it, Utah Street at Camden Yards. So it's sort of, this is part of why with home run distances, it can be very deceiving in terms of what you see and what seems like a longer home run than others.
Yeah, and people don't, I think, just with their eyeballs, don't always look at the difference in distances in parks, right? Like, obviously, some parks can be 25, 30 feet difference in fence, and you just don't kind of think about that as you're saying, oh, well, it hit the stands, right? So there can be big differences. Hey, real quick on Mazzara, sleeper rookie of the year candidate? Because we're talking about, you know, this home run. He turned 21 at the end of April, and he's crushing the ball right now, 302, 348, 479, that's batting average on base and slugging. It's very, very good.
The AL crop is not that great. I could see Michael Fulmer, if he starts to put things together, a pretty decent prospect who's going to get chances to start. But the AL crop of rookies is not. Yeah. Byron Buxton and Jose Berrios have not really.
Not worked out,
you know,
for the Twins.
Byung-ho Park, I guess, if he heats back up, could be a candidate.
I'm a big fan of Michael Givens, but non-closing relievers are just never going to get anything.
I'd say it's Mazzara's. I don't want to say Mazzara's to lose, but I'd say he's.
Especially if he keeps hitting 491-foot home runs.
But enough about balls that have no chance of being caught. Let's talk about some baseballs that do get caught in the outfield.
That was a sweet segue. I like that. I thought this was interesting. We talked about this a few weeks ago. I think we were talking about Matt Harvey's issues, that maybe the Mets' outfield defense wasn't really helping him out very much. And so I put some thought into this, and I came up with a list of, I was trying to find balls that go to the outfield that could in theory be caught, right? So obviously home runs, forget about it. Ground balls, you know, forget about it. And what I came up with was non-home run fly balls and line drives that went between 200 and 400 feet. And the idea there is 200 feet is far enough so it's beyond the infielders. 400 feet isn't so far that it's going to be a home run or that nobody has a chance to catch it. You know, this isn't perfect. I didn't control for positioning or anything like that. But I thought it was really interesting because if you look at this type of batted ball, there's been almost 50,000 of them in the Statcast era. Major league average is 499, which is great. That's perfect, right? That's exactly 50-50 what I want.
Proposition.
It's exactly what you want because that's the kind of ball, like, okay, you know, 50% you do or you don't. That's really where you'd think talent or at least positioning would really kind of help you stand apart from the rest. So we compared the teams, you know, their performance last year and their performance through the first 2 months of this year. And I thought the results were kind of interesting. And I went into it assuming, hey, I bet you know, Mets probably aren't going to show up that well. They took the second biggest step back, right? So he said 499 is the average on this kind of ball. Last year, the Mets are above average, a 458 average against. This year, 506, so slightly below average. And I think that kind of goes exactly what we were talking about with the Mets, you know, interesting outfield alignment where Cespedes is playing center, but Lagares is a better center fielder, but the way the bats work, we've been over this a couple of times.
No question.
So I thought it was interesting, the teams that actually got better. And I love any opportunity to focus on the Braves right now in a positive way because it's a tough season for them. The Braves had the third best improvement. They were 491 last year, and they actually jumped all the way up to 438, right? It's obviously lower is better, it's batting average. That's really good. And I think if you look at it, it's not hard to see why. Ender Inciarte, acquired for Shelby Miller, who was a really, really good defensive outfield last year, and Malik Smith, who came over in one of the trades from San Diego. He's been a star out there.
He's one of the fastest guys in baseball, so it's not surprising that he can cover ground like that. Inciarte, my guess is there's a good chance he'll be a trade candidate this...
Inciarte came over, but you're right. And I think when you look at that deal, it's not just the fact that they got, you know, Swanson and all the, you know, Aaron Blair and this prospect and everything. It's the fact that Inciarte is a pretty good player, right? I mean, he's undervalued, I think.
But the two teams that have made the biggest jumps... Number two is fascinating, Chicago Cubs.
Cubs are good at everything.
And it's, you know, obviously Jason Hayward was the big signing because of defense, and it seems to be we've showing up in the numbers.
Invented a metric here, essentially, and they're number two in that. Like, there's nothing the Cubs aren't great at, but you're absolutely right. I mean, Jason Hayward, everybody's trying to, how do you quantify the defense he adds? And, you know, I don't want to say it's all Jason Hayward, because we've also talked about the Dexter Fowler, and he's changed his positioning, and I think that's a big deal. And the lack of Kyle Schwarber, you know, unfortunately, but no one would have said he's a Gold Glove outfielder. So I think that all goes into it. But clearly, a team that takes a big step forward like that, it's a 70-point difference in batting average. I look right to Jason Hayward.
It has to be, and it also justifies, at least for now, the fact that he is hitting like a...
Well, we don't need to talk about that. But he is at least coming forward with the glove. The number one team, and I made a joke...
The number one team in terms of upgrade. We should clarify who's the number one team in this...
The number one team is the same team who was the number one team last year. It's the Tampa Bay Rays. And I'm going to say a lot of that is Kevin Kiermaier, but it's not all Kevin Kiermaier.
I think a lot of it's positioning.
Yeah, also, absolutely. He's been injured. He hasn't played the last couple of days, or a couple weeks. So, the Tampa Bay Rays prevent more of these batted balls, these non-home run flies and liners between 200 feet and 400 feet. Last year, they were at 427, when, again, the average is 499. This year, at 414. So it's really, you don't have to look at it at batting average. You can just say 42% of those balls dropped, and this year only 41% of those balls dropped. So they're doing a really good job of preventing that kind of hit. The number one team, I was very surprised to see this. It's actually the Dodgers. Dodgers were slightly below average last year, 528. This year, they're 435. They've cut almost 100 points of batting average off of that kind of ball. That's a huge deal.
What would you attribute that to?
Shockingly, Yasiel Puig.
Okay. Right?
Yasiel Puig has not really been hitting that well this year, and it's been a big disappointment. But on defense, he's been fantastic. I looked this up. He's made four catches this year where he's had to travel at least 95 feet. He didn't do that once all of last year. We're only 2 months into the season. He has made such a huge step forward in the outfield. We all know the throwing arm. This doesn't even really account for arm. It's all about range.
Yeah.
He has really made a big step up in the outfield. And, you know, you look at the Dodger outfield, Jock Peterson, about the same as he was last year. Less Andre Ethier has been hurt, less Carl Crawford, who hasn't been playing that much. I think that helps, too. But that's like almost all Yasiel Puig to me.
Sure seems that way. And while we're talking about run prevention, I'd like another one of my segues.
Okay.
To talk about a pitcher who's preventing runs like few others right now.
Jose Fernandez. I feel like not enough people are talking about Jose Fernandez. There's a couple reasons. One is, you know, it's not hard to find an insanely good starting pitcher right now. You can talk about Arrieta, Kershaw, and on and on and on. And I think also he got off to a slower than expected start. Not totally unexpected, given that he's not terribly far off of elbow surgery. But if you look at his last five starts, 0.79 ERA, right? 49 strikeouts in 34 innings. Opponents hitting 183 against him. That's absurd. And I know you found a strikeout percentage stat that is kind of off the charts.
Yeah, right now he is leading the majors in strikeout percentage, 36%, which if it holds, obviously a lot of ways to go, would be the third highest in baseball history behind number one, Pedro Martinez, 1999, 37.5%, and Randy Johnson, 2001, 37.4%. So 36% would be third all-time behind two of the greatest pitching seasons.
Oh, don't sell it short, because the next two names on that list are also Pedro and Randy Johnson from different seasons.
Yes, Pedro 2000 and Randy Johnson 2000.
I think we looked at the top 10. The top 10 is entirely either Pedro or Randy Johnson and this year's Clayton Kershaw.
That's
along
correct.
Along with Jose Fernandez.
So anyway, Jose Fernandez has had the weirdest stretch that you could possibly imagine, because his last five starts, as we noted, he's been virtually unhittable. But in that time span, among starting pitchers, he has the highest exit velocity against of any starting pitcher in baseball, 95.8 miles per hour. And in that group, right below him, Justin Nicolino, Phil Hughes, Danny Salazar, Chad Bettis. So not the best pitchers in baseball right now. And for context, the other side of that list, the lowest exit velocity among starting pitchers is... I think it's number one is Scott Kazmir at like 83.8 miles per hour. He's been pitching very well. Then it's Kershaw, Arrieta, Cueto.
The guys you'd expect.
It's a difference of like 13 miles per hour.
Yeah, it's a big deal. And then you have the batted ball distance too, where he's got the highest batted ball distance against. Number three on that list is Shelby Miller, arguably been the least effective pitcher in baseball this year.
So it's very confusing, the stretch that Jose Fernandez is in the midst of right now. We've tried to dig into it to try and figure out how he's doing it.
He's unhittable, except that he's also getting crushed.
Exactly.
Basically what you're trying to say.
Well, there's been a couple of factors, one of which he's been seemingly unhittable with runners or lucky with runners on base. in that stretch, 99.3 left on base percentage. So basically, he's not letting any base runners.
So one, probably,
yeah,
right?
Well, basically one. His K rate with runners in scoring position this season, 40.4%. Only Drew Pomeranz, 40.5%.
My boy Drew Pomeranz.
Is higher. And no one else is above 36. So basically, like, as we know, it's harder to pitch out of the stretch, but he is somehow, his K percentage is even higher when runners are on.
So he elevates himself in the biggest spots. You might almost say he's clutch.
We won't go there. And then you found some info about his batted balls in play above 100 miles per hour.
Yeah, I thought about this because you told me this morning, and I thought it was fascinating. Like, how could he be getting hit that hard but also not be giving up home runs left and right? And the first thing I thought of is he has to be getting a little bit lucky, right? Because you can give up 100 miles an hour batted ball. We always talk about marrying exit velocity and launch angle because, you know, if you hit 100 miles an hour and straight up, it's a pop-up. So we looked this up. Since May 9, this is his last five starts, he has given up 15 batted balls of 100 miles an hour, seven of them hits, right? So that's a 466 batting average. And 466, well, that sounds really high, right? Major league average for the year on balls over 100 miles an hour, 617. So he's actually been considerably lower. So that's a little bit of luck. We looked at the spray chart, you know, there's a, you know, ground out to second base, ground out to third base, you know, line out to left field. Whether that's the team positioning their players properly or just total dumb luck, he's really been getting fortunate on these hard hit balls.
Yeah, and this is not to take away from Fernandez, because obviously he's an incredibly talented pitcher who knows how to miss bats.
Yes.
So he is unquestionably one of the elite pitchers in baseball, but just the different, I don't know what, the framework of his five-game like hot stretch is so, I've never seen anything like
it's
this.
It's so weird. Like, he misses bats like nobody else and then gets hit harder than anybody else. It's just the weirdest thing. And I have to go back a little bit too. It's five games, right? Anything can happen over five games. So I can't wait to see his next start now, because I got to know if this keeps up. Like, I have to know. It's going to be awesome. We're talking about pitching, right? So let's go to a different kind of top pitching, the Tigers here, because I don't think the Tigers have necessarily been a great pitching staff this year, but they're a very interesting pitching staff, right? I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago. When you looked at the top four-seam fastball spin rate guys, starting pitchers from last year, Scherzer, Verlander, Garrett Richards, Rick Porcello, and Jeff Samardzija. So, okay, you know, five pretty well-known pitchers. But if you think about it, three of those guys were Tiger teammates for half a decade in Detroit, even though they weren't last year. And then you realize, well, that's a lot of high spin fastballs there. We couldn't measure it at the time. We had no idea at the time. But okay, that's interesting. And, you know, Scherzer's moved on to Washington, and Porcello's moved on to Boston, and Verlander's still there. So you thought, well, okay, interesting coincidence, but, you know, they don't really have much high spin anymore. Well, I looked this up the other day. Four-seam fastball team spin leaders this year, Detroit's still number one. So they lost those two guys, and they still have high spin on their fastballs. And all of a sudden, you start to think, maybe that's not just a coincidence. Maybe they're doing this on purpose.
Exactly. And as we've talked about before, spin rate, there's a clear correlation, four-seam fastball with spin rate, where a higher spin rate on a four-seam fastball kind of gives, that's what gets the quote-unquote rising fastball effect. The ball defies gravity a little bit longer, and you get a lot more swing strikes and pop-ups when you can throw that pitch effectively up in the zone. It's a big part of, you know, the guy we always come back to, Chris Young, doesn't throw that hard, but gets swing strikes anyway because of an incredibly high spin rate.
Right, and you can have a low spin rate and be successful too. Low spin sinks, you get grounders. Brett Anderson, for example, very high ground ball rate on a very low spinning fastball. If you're in the middle, you know, we always go back to Joe Kelly and Nathan Eovaldi. You can throw hard, but if your fastball doesn't move, it's going to get hit hard. So I thought that was really interesting, and, you know, you kind of think it's not a coincidence necessarily when you look at the guys who they've collected, right? You know, Jordan Zimmermann, right? They went out and they gave Jordan Zimmermann a huge contract last year because he's got high spin, right? But he also uses it high. And I think this kind of goes back to what you're saying. If you have a ball that seems like it's going to defy gravity slightly longer and you keep it high, then that's really going to screw with the hitter.
Yeah. And to be honest, this is one of the reasons why probably I've underrated Jordan Zimmermann in my mind for many years. He's one of those guys who doesn't miss a ton of bats. And so I've always sort of been like, well, it's going to catch up to him, the fact that he doesn't strike out a lot of guys, but he sort of is a harder throwing version of the Chris Young template of he gets a fair amount of strikeouts, but he's also getting a lot of weak fly balls.
Right. And so we looked at, you know, these high spin fastballs, and I define this as fastballs that were 2,400 RPM or higher. And it's arbitrary, I guess, but that's kind of the cutoff point where about 20% of fastballs spin higher than that. So I thought that was a good cutoff. And I looked at those 2,400 RPM fastballs that were thrown between 2.5 and 6 feet high, which is, you know, essentially that's a very high strike, or, you know, above the strike zone in some cases. The Tigers have thrown 26% of their 2,400 plus RPM pitches that high. That's the highest in baseball. The second highest is San Francisco, 21%, Cleveland, 21%, and then Toronto, 17%. The MLB average is only 11%. So they're doing this more than twice as often as anybody else, and they have eight different guys on the staff who are doing that better than average. Now, Verlander, second only to, wait for it, Drew Pomeranz, my boy. You know, he does it 62% of the time. That's how he's kind of made his comeback, you know, diminished velocity a little bit. High spin fastballs thrown high really worked out well for him. Zimmerman's in the mix there. You know, Mark Lowe, who they signed last winter. Justin Wilson was a trade from the Yankees. Shane Green was a trade for the Yankees. Matt Boyd was a trade from the Blue Jays for David Price. Michael Fulmer came over in the Cespedes deal. So it really does seem like they're starting to acquire these guys on purpose, which is, it's a really interesting strategy.
And for years, you know, the Tigers were sort of seemingly punting infield defense, so to speak, when they, you know, they had Cabrera at first, and they trade for Prince Fielder, and they're like, oh, we're going to put Cabrera at third base, and people are kind of like, well, what are they doing? And looking back, you know, maybe I don't want to give them too much credit, but it seems like, okay, maybe there was a method to this where they were thinking, well, we not only do we miss a lot of bats, the guys that do, when they do make contact, it's a lot of fly balls. So we knew that they could sacrifice defense for offense in the infield, and they, for the most part, have not won the elusive World Series title, but they've been a very successful team for many years.
And we should probably clarify that, you know, this high spin thrown high is not necessarily a magic bullet, right? Like, when done right, it's really effective. Hitters last year had a 10% swinging strike rate on all pitches. It was over 13% on those kind of pitches. But, you know, obviously, there's a lot that goes into it. Spin is a part of the overall kind of pitching arsenal, you know, obviously velocity and placement and even sequencing is a big deal. So the Tigers staff overall hasn't necessarily been great, and that's in large part because Mike Pelfrey and Anibal Sanchez have both struggled a lot and they've made a lot of starts. But it's a really interesting strategy, and I've seen enough guys that they've collected that I don't think it's a coincidence. I really do think that this is something they're either teaching or acquiring for.
It certainly seems that way.
We got to end with the Mariners here, by the way. I don't know if anybody's noticed this.
Not as graceful of a segue as we've had for
the
previous segments.
It's okay. That's okay. The Mariners are leading baseball in home runs right now. They have 77 homers. They have 56 more home runs than the Braves do right now. That is insane.
And it's so funny because for so many years, it was like their offseason strategy was like, let's hit some dingers. You know, it was like, let's get Mark Trumbo, you know.
Yeah, let's get these slugger types.
This year, they sort of went the other direction. They brought in Aoki. They were like, oh, we're going to try and like build up our OBP.
Yeah. They got rid of Mike Zunino, who was sent down, had power, but no OBP. Like, they kind of changed. Jerry DePoto seemed like he was really trying to change the athleticism of the roster, and here they are crushing home runs.
Yeah, and they appear to be on course to end the longest playoff drought in baseball. Obviously, a lot of baseball left to be played, but they're playing great ball with one weird quirk in their home road splits.
They are this is as of Wednesday afternoon, they are two games below 500 at home, 12-14. They are 18-7 on the road, which is fascinating to me. If you look at it, though, they've got 38 homers on the road, which is third best, and they've got 39 home runs at home, which is the best. So it's not really like, you know, it's not a Coors Field effect, right? Because obviously Safeco is kind of known as being a hard park to hit in. They're still hitting home runs at home. It's not just like on the road, which is fascinating to me. Now, I will say, one part of this could have been predicted, and in fact was predicted, by us multiple times on this very show. And that was that Robinson Cano was going to have a big year, right? We looked at his exit velocity from last year. We know that he was dealing with the stomach bug and the hernia and all that. His slugging percentage last year, .446. His slugging percentage this year, .583. He might be the AL MVP.
He's certainly going to be in the discussion. And I've also been impressed. I mean, he's not having the kind of year he had last year, Nelson Cruz, but that was a signing I thought was doomed to fail. Because for me, the problem with the Mariners is always, Safeco is death to right-handed pull power hitters. We saw this with Adrian Beltre when he was there, where he basically like lost 3 years of his career because he was hitting all these fly balls that died on the warning track. And I figured Nelson Cruz would be a disaster there. But he was obviously one of the best power hitters in the AL last year, slugging above 500 again this year. It's turned out to be a pretty effective signing for them.
I'm happy to admit when I'm wrong, and on the Nelson Cruz signing, I was wrong. Two other pieces that are really helping the Mariners this year. Kyle Seager, he's been a pretty good third baseman there for a couple years. His slugging percentage up from .451 to .521 this year, which is pretty big. And shockingly, Leonis Martin, who center fielder came over from Texas last year. He was known for having a really strong arm. He's a good defensive outfielder. This goes back to what DePoto was saying. He wanted to get more athletic. He wanted to get better defense. That's why Leonis Martin came in. All of a sudden, he's hitting the ball. Right? 9 home runs, slug percentage up from 412 to 443. I know he's injured now, but that is an unlikely source of power.
Yeah, and it's a fun team. It's a good baseball. Like, they've got a great fan base. They've sort of as a non, you know, West Coast person, they're a team that still stands out for sort of having a really like engaged, fun fan base. So it's a team that, you know, I like to see. It's fun when the Mariners do well, at least for me.
I've never been to Safeco, but I have been to the Kingdom. That's a discussion for another day. Thank you for listening to the StatCast podcast. I'm Mike Petriello. He's Matt Myers. Please join us next week. We'll have an extra special in-studio fun guest. Thanks for listening. Catch you then.